Hello.
And I think we're ready to go.
Fantastic.
So, yes, we have everyone joined. And as usual, this is kind of the live version. And then we record and put recording on YouTube and in the various podcast platforms. So that's nice. We have a very interesting weekend chat for you all today. We have the one and only Swambat, Daniel Tenner, visiting us. Very happy about that. And we have a number of topics that we would like to go into a bit of detail on. But first of all, let's do what we usually do. Let Casper introduce who are the Angels Wing.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thanks, of course, Daniel / Swambat for joining us on our space. We are the Angels Wing, founded by international friends.
Johannes and Espresso are from Europe. Yoon's from the US, Rebel and myself, we're from Asia, driven by our common passions to showcase independent artists and their art, and helping them pretty much to stand out from the crowded NFT market, not so crowded in the bear market these days. But the NFT market is primarily dominated by generative 10K PFP projects, which we'll talk a lot about today. But we also want independent artists to stand out from the crowd and help them gain visibility for their art. So we showcase their art in an on-cyber virtual gallery. And the logic behind it is the larger a collection of art brings a cross-pollination of viewership. And that has actually helped quite a few of our artists reach collectors rather efficiently through sales. And of course, now on-cyber has a very convenient portal feature that allows us to expand the gallery to an almost infinite reach. So we're very glad to say that has been a very good
thus far. The easiest way to get in touch with us if you're an independent artist would be to join our Cozy Disc. Everything's on our link tree in our bio, so just hit us up. If you're an indie artist who needs help featuring your art, or you just want to join a friendly NFT art community who just chats about everything under the sun, we have podcasts, we have spaces, and we have a gallery and a Discord. So do join us and have fun. Back to you, Espresso.
Thank you. Yeah, we mentioned a couple of topics in the tweets, and we're thinking that it's probably good to start with kind of a general overview of the NFT market state. And first of all, Daniel, why don't you introduce yourself, who you are and what you do?
Sure, thank you. So how do I introduce myself? I'm a serial entrepreneur, I guess. I've been in the startup space for about 15 years or so. I started 3 companies. The first 2 didn't work out so well. The third one worked a bit better. It's still going now. I left it in 2019, but it's still running. Somebody else is running it for me, and I'm getting dividends, which is a really lovely place to be. And I'm really grateful to have the freedom that this gives me. And I took the time after I left to go and try to find myself, as they say. There's a sort of cliche around this. And somewhere in that quest, I found myself suddenly very interested in Web3, with the sense that this is the next huge wave of innovation. And I've always been into technology, into startups, into those kind of big things that change the world. And that's what got me into it. And then the NFT angle really sucked me in, because I saw this incredible potential of this space to revolutionize fundraising, to change it, to improve it, especially fundraising for startups. For those who aren't familiar with how that works, it's usually a really awful process for everybody involved, both the limited partners who fund, the VCs or the VCs themselves, or the seed investors, the angels and so on, or the people raising the money, or the employees. Everybody gets screwed in the process. Nobody's happy. And I see a lot of potential in the NFT space in like improving this model, in coming up with novel ways of sharing value with people who believe in you, raising money from your best customers instead of raising it from angels and investors, like traditional investors, raising it without selling equity upfront, which is a really tough decision that most startups get pushed into right out of the gate, which they should really delay until later. And yeah, like I see a lot of potential to the NFT space to help with that. And that's generally the angle that I come towards NFT from, rather than the artistic angle, which I also recognize, but I know I'm not an art collector. And so if I sound, in my opinions, like I'm ignoring the art world. It's not because I don't care, it's because I don't really know very much about the art world, and that's not really my area of specialty. Does that seem like a good intro?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And yeah, that's a good starting point. And just to add, you've been in the space for some time already.
Yes.
And you create lots of market analysis, and you have your own podcast and YouTube streams and stuff, right?
Yeah, so I jumped into the NFT space back in September last year, bought in some projects. That's when I figured out that this Web3 thing was more than just numbers, like just crypto numbers going up and down on TradingView, and like really researched the technology and got really enthused. I've been trading NFTs since then. I've come generally in a profitable position, even in this bear market, at least in ETH terms. I think my NFT profits have just about offset my disastrous crypto losses. And at one point, I also realized that one of the key questions I wanted to know is if this NFT market is in a bull or a bear market. So I started building statistics tools to try and figure this out. And then I decided to share them more widely. And then for quite a while, I ran a daily NFT market analysis thread, and like for a bit as well, a daily live stream of NFT market analysis, and even for a while, daily NFT reviews. I then paused these for about a month. My life got a bit disrupted and I haven't picked them up again, but they're on my to-do list at the moment. I'm upgrading the chart engine quite substantially because the old one was a bit obsolete in various ways. And once that's done, I probably won't be posting daily market analysis because I think that's a little bit too frequent. That was a bit too demanding on myself, but I would certainly want to go back to weekly, maybe bi-weekly, like currently thinking maybe do a thread on Monday and a live stream on Friday or something like that. That seems like a rhythm that I should be able to manage.
Nice. Yeah, so I've been following the various types of analysis and found it very helpful and useful, especially the focus on volume as a kind of key metric. And we wanted to start by bringing up the topic of this current market that we're in, the bear market. And we got a question from the audience also asking how much longer till we hit the bottom. So what's your take?
How long is a piece of string? I don't think anybody knows. Any opinion is potentially wrong about this. But I mean, it depends on what you're looking at. If you're looking at the market as a whole, I suspect we're not going to get a massive boom cycle like we had last summer or in January this year until there's a more of a risk appetite in the financial markets, when they feel like, okay, equities are just like, I've missed the boat on equities, or I've missed the boat on crypto, and oh, NFTs are still there, let's invest in NFTs. I think that's what happened last time as a kind of cycle, and you need those two boats to be going already before NFTs become really exciting to everybody. But what could happen in the meantime is a slow change that can result in very good returns from certain projects, just not the same kind of projects that I think have done well in the last couple of years, because I do think that it's a very powerful fundraising model. And I think some startups are going to use this fundraising model. I don't think they're going to be the startups that are the most flashy and the most visible. Moonbirds might be a great project, for example, but it's already like hugely expensive. The potential for the price to go up there, I believe, is relatively limited, but there might be a lot of projects that will start to use this method of fundraising with relatively low mint prices that then will steadily build value and might get very good returns in that time. It's not going to be the sort of what I see as a sort of lottery bull market model where you buy the right project and it goes up by 20x in the next week. But it might be the kind of model where you buy the right project and it goes up by 20x in the next couple of years, which 20x in a couple of years, I think, is a really great return. It's just the NFT space that has got us used to these kind of insane returns of getting 20 times your money in a week, which is not realistic because nothing actually grows that fast except for hype. And hype is not sustainable. Maybe so COVID numbers can grow that fast, but I don't think we figured out how to financialize them yet.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be lots of potentially investment opportunities there of buying into the kind of projects that are actually building real businesses. And if they are honest and they figured out how to share the value with their NFT holders, the returns could be fairly substantial there, but over 6 months, 18 months, 2 years, something like that, which I believe are realistic. That's a realistic period when a startup can offer really high returns. I see somebody has their hand up.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, June, you have your hand up.
Hi, Daniel. It's great to talk to you. So I have a question regarding the bear market and what may influence in the future. So we have this transition to a proof of stake model soon. And I was wondering whether you think this will influence the empty market or general, so the Ethereum ecosystem in a positive or a negative way. Because as we have seen what happened to Tornado Cash recently, that which has been censored or like sanctioned by the US Treasury. So I was wondering how likely do you think, for instance, that the entire network may be censored at the protocol level, given that the fact that these exchanges, Coinbase, Binance, Kraken, and Lido, they control over half of all staked ETH, and meaning that they control like a substantial amount of validator nodes. And I wonder when, for instance, the government want to control the system, whether they basically have to comply, and also because they control so a substantial amount of the system. And yeah, so I'd be interested to hear your opinion on that.
This is slightly outside my area of expertise, if anyone has any area of expertise in crypto. I dodged a question in the sense that I don't know what will happen with the Tornado Cash stuff and the censorship and so on. I'm pretty sure that Ethereum will not do well if it becomes Ethereum.gov, as I've heard it jokingly labeled on the Bankless podcast this week. And if Ethereum does really badly, then that's probably going to drag NFTs down. NFTs are based on Ethereum with it. And I guess if Ethereum has a kind of amazing boom time after the proof of stake merge, that might also create the conditions where people feel like, oh, NFT projects are also it might bring hype basically to the market, and it might create another kind of hype bubble. I don't see it as influencing really the fundamentals of the startups that are residing on the Ethereum blockchain with their NFTs. So it could have an influence on the hype, but whether it's proof of stake or proof of work or something else doesn't really matter to the NFTs as a kind of share analog model, if you
that makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. I was just wondering whether people basically care about like the fundamental Ethereum like ecosystem in that sense.
I have like a bunch of thoughts about that, but they're all like very uninformed thoughts based on listening to other podcasts, and I feel like I'm really not. But maybe Johan has Johan, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, because he raised his hands during the
Yeah, it's Johannes is my name. And welcome to the show. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm a developer. And as far as I know from the Ethereum dev call, some of the node developers said that they will die on the hill, that they are not going to censor anything into the protocol. If US government really wants to go that route, I think, then the actual thing that might happen is that citizens are just excluded from the party. So I remember the time 2017, the American citizens were excluded from nearly all ICOs because there were already some rules applied. And then the projects just said, okay, the world is bigger than just the US. And yeah, they were not able to participate. I would say this will be again the same if agencies are going to enforce their citizens to block smart contracts. Yes, then the world will move on, but not with the US. That would be my opinion. And I would hand over again to Espresso.
Okay. I just add that one thing that I've heard as well is that in terms of the staking pools being a centralized vulnerability, my understanding is the network, people are aware that that's a vulnerability. At the moment, I think Coinbase stated that they would not censor transactions if asked to. They would rather release their entire staking pool than do that. And there's also sort of rebellious undercurrents that if any staking provider tries to censor transactions in this way, to use their stake to censor transactions, they might find Ethereum forking to exclude their entire staking pool.
With a social slestrum.
Yeah, the layer zero is what they're calling it. And so I suspect Ethereum is going to be the winner in this particular battle. I just hope nobody ends up going to jail like that poor dev in the Netherlands for this stuff, because that's just really ridiculous. And it sucks to have your life destroyed by the fact that you're dragged in jail for 6 months and in lawsuits and courtrooms and stuff.
By the way, you had another interesting point. You said that you are waiting for long-term returns, which is great because I'm living in Europe and at least in my country, in Germany, it's super cool if something keeps value over 12 months, because then I don't have to pay taxes. So this would be totally awesome for me if it's not going up and down in 1 month. And so I'm really waiting for this for long-term gains. But another point is, as an investor or trader, would you see NFTs like securities? Because as far as you said, it really looks like you are expecting returns from actual working business, which would make them a security. And this would, again, cause a lot of problems.
Yes, and I think there's a kind of line that everybody has had an interest in keeping blurry, but it's like most of the NFTs that I'm interested in are securities, in my view. And there's, I understand that it's interesting to keep the line blurry, to keep pretending that it's not actually a security. I think the reality is that they are securities. They are, because they are investments of money by groups of people who are looking for a return, and they expect somebody to do some kind of work with that money that is going to create that return. And if that's not security, I don't know what is. The problem is not so much whether they are security or not, is whether the securities law is then actually adapted to the world today. And right now, like, one of the problems that I see with the securities law is that, like, it's, while it pretends to protect smaller investors, or like people who aren't accredited investors, as they call it, people who aren't rich already, basically, it doesn't actually protect them. It protects them from good returns. It forces them to invest in the stock market, which has awful returns. If you're really good at the stock, like if you read books about stock market investment, they'll all tell you to set your expectations that if you play this really well, you'll make about 10 to 20% return per year. And that's okay, great. So you beat inflation by some small percentage. That's not life-changing. It's, if you're starting from a small amount of money, you're never going to change your life by getting 10, 20% returns. Yeah, you might save your entire life so that you have some money to retire on. That's not great. And conversely, you look at the startup world, and there, that is a space where realistically, if you make the right investments, if you invest in the right kind of companies, they can grow by incredible factors really quickly. Like my services, there was a productized service startup. So it was not even like a product startup, because those can grow like gangbusters. But my productized service startup grew its revenue from the first year we did, like from a standing start with no investment, we did about £80,000 of revenue. The second year we did £310,000. And the third year we did £1 million. Like those kind of returns are not unusual for an early startup. But, and in fact, for product startups, if you invest in the right ones, you can get substantially higher returns than that. But all that investment wealth is currently unavailable to most people, like for their own protection. Instead, they're forced to play the world, the game of the stock market, where effectively they can just invest in the most distant and ultimately unexciting, like relatively low return model that there is. Which, if private investors try to play the trading game in the stock market, they get completely wrecked by the professional traders who have much better tools and can do it better. If they try to do spread betting, which they are allowed to do, they also get completely wrecked by the professional traders. So instead, they could, like, the buy and hold investment that they could try is startups, but they're not allowed to do that. And I think that's a very poor feature of the current investment landscape.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and so I think let's embrace the fact that they're securities, and let's change the stupid securities law that says that non-accredited investors aren't allowed to invest in the best investment there is. Is the SEC trying to protect people from crypto investments, which is one of the best assets that has been in the last 10 years?
Yeah, that's true. It's probably the best opportunity of our generation, and this various kinds of crypto investments. Of course, not going to say which ones and when to buy, because who knows. But yeah. So I think let's transition to the topic of royalties, because that's a hot topic these days. And it's also a form of revenue for the project or startup issuing the NFTs, and for artists putting out collections. And there's been a lot of discussion after PseudoSwap announced that they don't support royalties, they don't collect them, they don't distribute them to creators. And recently, this new exchange, X2Y2, also announced that they're following suit in some form. So, Daniel, why don't you start off by describing your view and the things that you think are important in this discussion to pay attention to.
Yeah, sure. I'll stake my view in the conversation and we'll see where we go from there. It's worth like prefacing that, again, my view is based on the NFT as a startup fundraising model. I think the artist space is different. And there's been a kind of, I think the artist space has benefited from the fact that it's been merged with the NFTs as a fundraising thing model and from the huge speculative bubble that came with that. And also the speculative NFTs, like the NFTs as fundraising, have benefited from being, from pretending to be arts and therefore like wiggling out of having any responsibility to deliver anything to their holders. There's been a big bit of a kind of symbiotic or maybe parasitic, it's unclear which one, relationship between the two. But I think they are distinct and I think it's maybe time to start separating them more clearly and clarifying the rules for each of those, because most of those NFT projects that we've, almost every single 10K PFP project, almost every single one of them, if not every single one of them, falls more in the startup category than in the art category. And if you think about them, like there's been a meme that went out after, I think Kobe tweeted it and got assaulted by Twitter people. And then Punk6529 tweeted it as well, got welcomed by all the Twitter people, that NFTs are just old coins with pictures. And I think that's very true of the large PFP projects, like anything that's got a few thousand items in it. And they're just like old coins that are more illiquid, like fewer items, easier to manipulate, easier to corner the market. And they have this royalties thing that like allows project owners to make revenues in ways that normally, even for old coins, even shit coins wouldn't typically do that. Like, for example, having royalties. Like, imagine if you bought a coin, I don't know, Shiba or something, and you're buying this and you find out that whenever you sell it, you have to pay 12.5% of the sale price to the project owners. You'd be like, that's absolutely ridiculous. And from a NFTs as startup tokens perspective, I think actually the royalties model is like a kind of obsolete feature that should have been removed a while ago. I embrace the fact that it's going away. I think that's a good thing for all these NFT startups. I don't think NFT startups should be relying on royalties as a way to make money. It'd be as weird as if Apple was relying on how much Apple stock is traded in order to make its revenue. It makes absolutely no sense for a startup to make revenue from the trading of its equity or its NFT tokens or so on. Why they should be making revenue from is building something with the money that they've raised and that thing becoming something valuable. And then they can offer benefits to the NFT holders that make them worth something. And that's how they share value with the people who invested in them early on and believed in them and gave them millions of dollars to build something. I think this idea that somehow they're owed morally to have these royalties forever, I don't buy that. I think with the artist world, it's a little bit different. But for the NFT, for the PFP and startup space, I think it's an idea that was borrowed from the artist space that nobody really examined properly. And now it's being examined and it's being thrown out the window. And a lot of people are like, hey, wait a minute, we were making lots of money from this idea. And they're very upset about it. And I'm like, tough luck, time to adapt. We're in Web 3. Things are changing all the time. And this is actually a good change, I think.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. And yeah, that's very well put. And I also like the point about we need to distinguish between the art and the PFP projects, because they do have very different mechanics and different trajectories as well in terms of what people expect. Like an artist putting out work, collectors only expect to get the art, right? there's usually not any utility with that, and usually not any kind of benefits that will cost the artist a lot of money to uphold. Although, of course, it's not always as clear. And there are examples of art projects that have big plans and do a lot with their NFTs, kind of to build on them and create incremental value and changes. Like the Decagons from Deca, for example, come to mind. Which, is it an NFT project or an art project? Depends on how you define things. And I see Johannes has raised his hand as well.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed because we already have seen each other in the Meta Angels Discord, and I was really excited to get to the counterpart opinion because I was clearly focused on an artist view. And here I was prepared to say, yes, but how to pay the servers, and the artist has to entertain his collectors, and how to finance everything for me. But I totally agree that it makes absolutely sense to distinguish between some investment vehicle like stocks, where you're just buying into the company, and if you are not happy with your share, then you can give it to somebody else. And of course, I wouldn't expect that after an initial investment round, the company gets even more money and is able even to dump the price and get again money. Yeah, yes, I was.
There's been some really perverse outcomes there. For example, when Azuki's founder revealed that he was a serial rugger, basically destroyed his own reputation, and Azuki's price collapsed, and there was so much trading that I think they made like $1 million or more of royalties from that. That's absolutely ridiculous.
I think they
drama instead of building value. It's terrible.
I think they even increased the royalties before making this bad announcement. I think
I'm not surprised.
So yes, absolutely agree. But what do you think if we are not looking on 10K projects which have clearly utility in mind, gated access, or as an investment into a real company? And what do we say if I, as an artist, are going to write a contract? Would you be still disagreeing that I, as an artist, could say, okay, I'm going to exclude this marketplace by technically putting the contract on a blacklist, and then they can't trade on the user's behalf these NFTs? I would somehow think this is, as an artist, I'm going to ban this gallery from showcasing my work. Would you agree that it's a valid opinion option for an artist? What do you think?
So I think there are the really important and interesting angle that is, I think, starting to, like, some people are talking about it, but it's not yet fully part of the conversation. And if you've read my recent tweets, you've seen me trying to push it into the conversation, is that there's a question of what is it exactly that we're buying here. And we've been telling people on the idea that you're buying digital property here. You're buying something that you own. It's the same thing as buying a painting that you could put on your wall, except it's a digital painting. But you're buying a thing that you own. And you own it online. If it's in your wallet, like, and your wallet has control of it, you can do what you want with it. And it's just the same as a painting that you have on your wall. Now, a painting that I have on my wall, I can go sell it to somebody. I don't have to pay a royalty for it. Yes, some galleries will want to charge royalties, and some galleries will, as in some galleries pay royalties to the artist, some don't. But it's my painting, as in it's on my wall. And if I choose to go and take it to a gallery, like an unreputable gallery, and sell the painting there, it's my choice because it's my property. And if we start to say, actually, it's not really your property because I'm going to restrict the way that you can use it, we enter a really dangerous area, I think, where it starts to undermine the entire concept of what it is that we're selling people. Because if we're selling people something that they don't really own, that can be blacklisted from various marketplaces, I as the artist can control, like, you've just bought this thing for me, which I told you was the art that is now yours, but I can still control it. I can maybe freeze it from a distance. That's something that people have discussed as well. I can blacklist it in various ways. I can blacklist you because I don't like what you've done with the art, and on a contractual basis, and stop you from doing further things with the art that I sold you. What exactly have I sold you? It goes back to the Web 2 model of things, where, you know, in the web so far, until Web 3, you don't actually own anything. You don't own your Twitter username. You don't even own the DNS domain. That's the closest thing we've had to property. But even that can be yanked by ICANN, who can, if they receive the right letters and so on from large companies and so on, they can take the domain name away from you. The closest thing we have to real online property is NFTs and crypto. And if somebody can just yank it away from you or affect your property from a distance, what is it really that you're buying? Is it really your property? This is not your keys, not your crypto idea, but it's not your keys, not your crypto. But even if it's my keys, if I do something that the creator doesn't like, they might block me, or they might affect my property. It's as if they found out, like, what other cases could they use to decide to, what if I post political opinions that the creator doesn't like, and they decide to come and freeze my NFT? This should be, like, never do that, because it just destroys the entire concept of what it is that you're selling.
I'm so happy that we finally can disagree, because okay. I think right now, This is, of course, a super huge problem. And we had this in the previous space on our weekend chat. We had one artist who said, right now, nobody knows what the collector is buying, because actually you are just buying a token which is pointing to some address in the internet. And this might be a JPEG. And nobody knows what happens if I'm going to buy this token. Is it now allowed for me to print it, to make money out of it? The intellectual property and all the stuff which we could do with this image is still not cleared, because most of the artists are not going to include a big letter explaining exactly what rights do you now get by owning that token with a JPEG on it. So nobody knows if he's allowed to print it and sell it, for example. And I think there's a huge problem behind is that we should make it clear in advance. Okay, you are going to buy this JPEG, and then you are allowed, for example, to print it or to make some money out of it. And if I already have this terms of conditions for my JPEG, then I could say, of course, and if you are going to resell it, I want to have some money. And if you don't want to accept this, you shouldn't invest into this. But I think it's a deeper problem. It's unclear licensing, because if you are not writing anything to the NFT, then all rights still belong to the creator. You know? If nothing is written to it, then you are not allowed, for example, to make money out of that JPEG. And I think that's the problem behind.
Yeah, and you're right. That's definitely a problem to solve, because if the NFTs don't have at least the same as buying a signed print from the artist, then like they are vastly inferior to signed prints, and we might as well go back to signed prints and screw this whole digital art thing. It's had its time. It was a nice little bubble, and let's move on. Let's move back to non-digital art. Because what the hell are you buying then? You're just buying some kind of, like, why do we need Web3 for that? Just have a website where you can pretend to own stuff. If you don't own stuff in any meaningful way, like that's comparable to owning a physical item, then you're not owning it. And then stop talking about collecting. You know, you're collecting it in the same way that you're collecting Pokemon in Pokemon Go. It's, yeah, you've collected the Pokemons, but they belong to Pokemon, like to whatever organization was building Pokemon Go. They're not yours any more than your World of Warcraft items or something. So if we're going to say it's better than World of Warcraft items, then make it better than World of Warcraft items. Don't make it the same thing where you're still like not really owning the thing.
So I think this notion of the artist can define the terms and conditions is closely linked in my mind to how copyright works in this case. Even if you buy an art NFT, you don't have full exclusive rights over the artwork. The artist can still make prints. They can still exhibit it in galleries. They can show it on their website.
Yeah, and that's true for signed prints as well.
Yes, yes. For art, there's no such thing as you buy it, you own it fully, 100% exclusively.
But if you buy a poster, like a digital, like a print of some digital art signed by the artist, which has the provenance and it's the art that the artist created, it's printed on a piece of, on a nice piece of paper and framed and so on, you can do what you want with that piece of paper. You've bought that. And yeah, you can't go and reproduce the art. Like, you don't own the copyright to the art. But I don't think collectors expect that they own the copyright to the art. But they do expect that they own the thing that they bought, which might be a poster or like a frame print or might be an NFT. But then if they don't even own that, if they just were granted the right to pretend that they own it, then I'm not sure what exactly they bought. Yes, and I think it's important that we resolve that and fight that battle. And I'm really hoping that the side of making NFTs at least equivalent to owning a digital print, like a signed print of a digital art, wins. Because otherwise, I think the entire concept is like empty.
So we agree on putting a license on this. And now coming back to this, if I write into my license, okay, you are allowed to, for example, use it on a TV show, or you are allowed to reproduce it as long as you hold the token. And if I'm writing in that terms of agreement that I still want to have some royalties, and I bake it into the smart contracts that everybody who's going to not pay the royalties, then I'm going to change the metadata or just not allow trading on bad marketplace. Would that be okay if I have first voted into the terms of conditions that I am expecting some ongoing royalties? What do you think? It must be crystal clear, of course.
Yeah, I think that the artist expresses that wish and says, this is what I'd like to, this is what I expect, is one thing. They might sell prints and say, I'd like you to sell it in authorized marketplaces. But I think where it infringes on what you can actually do with it, where they start to restrict what you can actually do with it, like what you can do with a token, I think that crosses a line that is becomes very uncomfortable for me, because then like it then it becomes unclear what it is that I bought. If I can't do what I could do with like a print, like a physical print, then like it's unclear where the line is going to stop, like how, what other restrictions are going to come in, and what it, and conceptually just what it is that I actually bought here. Because the analogy that we've used to encourage people to buy these things is that you're buying art, you're collecting art. How am I collecting art if it's no different from, as I said, an item in World of Warcraft? And it's just, there's a license, they can control what I can do with it. I'm not sure what it is I'm buying then. And the whole global digital art marketplace needs to be re-explained with this new principle that, okay, you're actually buying a license that's conditional, that has various terms and conditions that depend on the artist, and the artist might decide to yank it, and they could have a bad day, and they just pull out all their artwork because they're upset at everybody. And no, like, you know, that should be a line that is not crossed at all. And ideally, the contracts should really be written so that it's impossible to cross that line. And right now, I think they are, except, of course, they can try to delete the JPEGs. But those JPEGs are usually backed up in various places, and the tokens are the bit that matters, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it comes back to something as Johannes mentioned, that's been a topic in this community before as well. And artists like Arjen has written up license on and terms and conditions on his art. And one great point that we've discussed previously is that in the traditional art, an artist can make the same artwork several times and sell it several times. Someone can go into a gallery and say, oh, I like that painting. Oh, it's sold already. Yeah. I'll paint you another one.
And that's what we do all the time. My father.
You told us this, and I was mind blown by the fact that I'm primarily collecting digital art. So that was very surprising. But then it speaks to the fact that the artist is the one that ultimately decides everything about their outputs. And that means that also as collectors, we have to trust the artists that we collect. It digitally or in the traditional art world, trust that they don't suddenly tomorrow produce 100 copies of the artwork you just collected for a high premium and then dump it on the market. So
yeah, but like at the same time also, even in the case where, let's say, Johannes paints a painting and I really like it and it's a one of one, like it's a unique thing, and I buy it, like I negotiate a price and I buy it and I take it home. Yeah, Johannes can go and paint a bunch more that look more or less the same. But what he can't do is come into my house and take down my painting. And he can't go and say, no, now your painting, you're not allowed to look at it. Or he can't come and tell me, I don't like this marketplace, so I'm now going to go and put explosive device behind your painting. And if you take it into this auction house that I don't like, the painting will blow up. He can't do those things. He sold me the painting. It's now in my possession. I own it. I can do what I want with it. If I then go and Johanna says, hey, I don't like if you sell it in those auction houses because I don't like what they do and they don't pay royalties and stuff like that. If I then go and sell in those auction houses, Johannes can say, you know what, I'm not going to sell you any more paintings because I don't like you anymore. And that's totally fine. But it's still my possession that I bought is my property at that point. And like physically, Johannes could come and break into my house and steal his painting back. Sorry, Johannes, I keep beating on you.
Of course.
But let's say there's 100 different collectors. It would be quite a lot of work for Johannes to go into all the collectors' houses and steal all his paintings back. And but digitally, of course, things scale much faster. And it's very dangerous ground if we're saying, yeah, Johannes has sold 100 paintings to 100 different collectors, but he can at the push of a button just, you know, go and put exploding devices on all of them just to make sure that they don't go into the wrong auction houses. Like, that makes me very uncomfortable about what it is I'm buying.
I totally see your point. I wouldn't break into your house, but funny story. But I think this is super interesting that we have seen a similar action with that Banksy painting. Banksy, a physical street artist, was very upset that he paints something to a wall and then they are selling the full wall and make millions of it, and he's still very anonymous. There's a very famous video where on an auction house, then the artist Banksy really added some destroying machine on his artwork, And in the middle of the auction, this artwork then really was screwed up. And I think this is also something which the traditional artists are always very upset of, or some of them, that they are selling it for very low money. And then third and fourth tier, they are very expensive, but the artist is not going to see anything. So this was, for example, I will link it later on, where this physical painting was really destroyed during the auction.
Yeah, I remember that. That was crazy. And yeah, of course, artists are all about making statements like that and igniting discussion. So that's super interesting. And I think what really bugs me about this royalties discussion, and I've been very vocal on Twitter about a couple of these things, is that royalties are solving a problem, in my view. Because as you mentioned, an artist sells their painting for some price in the primary market, and then some of them at least see their art resold later for 100x, and they see nothing of that money. And this is why I think I was a bit annoyed by one of the points in Daniel's thread about there has not been any royalties before, so let's forget that we had royalties for a couple of years and then let's move on. Because in my view, it really solves this problem. Like, artists should have a share of their future success. And if that happens after they're deceased, their estate and their heirs should have a share of that success. So I think we have an opportunity here to use technology to solve a real world problem. And that annoys me that we're just going to throw it away.
I got pointed after I wrote that thread actually to a couple of, there are some initiatives, some government initiatives where they're trying to legally enforce royalties for artists at the legal level. In the UK, definitely, I think there was one in Australia as well, where, yeah, they're trying to, they've passed laws that demand royalties for certain artists. I'm not sure what exactly the details was, but the government is also getting involved in this. I do see that it does solve that problem for artists. I do want to push back on one thing, though. Like you mentioned, after they've died, their estate would receive something. There is like a sleight of hand that large corporations largely have driven around the idea of intellectual property, which they've created this concept of intellectual property in order to protect Mickey Mouse, basically. And they try to make it look like they own all these concepts and stuff. And the original reason why copyright came in was not to protect large corporations from people reusing stuff that was widely publicized everywhere. The reason why copyrights came in was to protect artists, creators, writers, first of all, and then later visual artists, audio artists, and so on, from publishers who would take their stuff, spread it all over the place, sell it for lots of money, and not pay a single penny to the artist who was sitting there and living. And that was considered to be not very helpful to encouraging artists to produce more art. So they came up with this whole copyright thing. I think the phrase in the US Act or something is to promote the progress of science and useful arts or something like that. Or that might be patent. Anyway, the point is they came up with this concept of copyright as a way to try and tilt the balance back towards artists to encourage them to make more art. The benefit of having this restriction on copying things is to encourage artists to make more art. And this is not a very popular opinion. A lot of people would disagree with me on this, but I think that actually this idea that somehow the copyright should extend till after you're dead feels like that's more a kind of side effect of the fact that the Disney Corporation has been extending the copyright laws as much as they can to try and stop Mickey Mouse from falling into the falling into the public domain. We benefit as a species, as a culture, when things go into the public domain. And the copyrights, these limited copyrights and these kind of royalties and so on, like they take away from the public domain. And they should only be in place if there's an actual benefit to those. And if the artist is alive, then obviously there is a benefit to rewarding them for their art because it encourages them to produce more art and encourages other artists to get started. But if they're not, there's a kind of question mark there. How does it encourage them if they're dead already?
Yeah, so I see that point, and it's definitely a kind of waters we have to thread carefully, because also I've noticed that it's also a thing, especially in the music industry, that bands and artists are fighting to get the rights back to their master recordings and to their work, really, because they've been especially badly treated by the industry and losing out on a lot of benefits that go to the holder of the IP, essentially.
Yeah, and what I want to suggest here is being cautious about which intellectual concepts you accept as given. There's a kind of like intellectual sleight of hand of getting somebody to just accept a certain concept as, yeah, of course that concept makes sense, and we're going to assume that it makes sense, and maybe it doesn't make sense. And this has happened, I think, on a global scale with the concept of intellectual property, and like getting people to assume that the idea of intellectual property makes sense. I'm not entirely sure that it does. Like the concept of copyrights, of protecting authors and creators and so on from people who want to copy their stuff and make a profit from them, makes sense because it serves a useful purpose. The concept of intellectual property introduces this idea that everyone has a moral right to stop others from copying the stuff they create. And this is a completely different conversation to the digital prints and stuff, but that also seems like a very dangerous slope because we always copying everything from everybody. Like our minds are basically machines that absorb all this information from everywhere and transform it and create new things out of old things. And I think most creators would agree that like the influences come from everywhere and are impossible to track. Johannes, what do you want to say?
First of all, thank you for this great argumentation. I was agreeing to so many parts, but I have one open point which I would also bring on the table. And this is, again, a more technical issue, because intellectual property is one thing. And if all art would be completely on-chain, then it would be like a real physical painting. It's there and it has no maintenance costs. But if it's usually NFT, then the token is pointing to some address, which is usually hosted on Amazon, and they have to pay the server to keep it running because it's a huge fat JPEG. Or this token is pointing to a file on the International Planetary File System, IPFS. And again, I have to pay for the pinning so that the stuff keeps going. And if the creator, for example, is frustrated, then he could stop paying. And then your art would anyway go away after some time. It would just vanish from your wall because nobody paid the hosting. So how could we solve this?
That's a really bad outcome for the entire space. If that starts happening, people are suddenly like, they're going to be like, what the hell did I buy? Like, how is it worth anything? And yeah, that's not good news for either artists or collectors.
Yeah, somebody has to pay for the hosting because otherwise no server will host the JPEG.
Only because they chose to host it on infrastructure that's not suitable for this. If you use Arweave, for example, it's paid for the next 200 years and it shouldn't go away. As you said, if you do on-chain art, Arweave is basically technically on-chain because it just doesn't disappear. It stays there once it's put in. It's not the same thing. I know it's not technically the same thing as on-chain.
But yeah, you are right. So I have to make clear that the hosting is already paid for 200 years so that people can still enjoy it after my death. But I think most of the project will have a big problem in 10 years.
And to be clear, the hosting on Arweave doesn't cost an arm and a leg. I looked into the cost of it and it's like $1 for, I don't know, it was like 100, no, 70 megabytes per dollar. No, sorry, 70 megabytes per dollar or 80 megabytes per dollar or something like that. And that's for the next 200 years. Even if you have a massive JPEG, that's 100 megabytes, it will cost you a buck to store it for the next 200 years. I think if you're selling your art on Ethereum, you could probably afford that.
Yeah, so
yes. Very good point.
Yeah, so Arweave is really interesting. And yeah, you pay for the storage up front, which is different from IPFS. So I see we are running out of time. One last point I wanted to transition to before we round off is going back to the NFT projects and royalty question. So if we assume that kind of zero royalties becomes the norm, what will happen with the way regular NFT projects are running and financing their operations? Because so far it's been like they mint one collection and then they have a runway for a year or something, or 6 months, or to run through this money super quick. And then they come up with their second collection, and then some of them are on their third collection. And of course, royalties keeps extending this. So what do you think will happen if they don't get royalties?
That's why I think it'd be a really good thing, because I think that what you're describing is a Ponzi project. Like if the only money you're getting is from getting more and more investors forever and getting those investors to keep trading stuff so you charge them royalties, then you're not running a business. You're just running some kind of scam. And yeah, I'll just be like controversial and call it just a scam, because a business builds something of value and sells that thing of value to people. Something that runs just by finding more and more investors and like that relies on needing more investors in order to function is not a business. It's not sustainable. It is basically a Ponzi. And some of those Ponzis are effective. Some of those are ineffective, but they're all just Ponzis. And ultimately, airdrops are not utility. Rewards based on royalties are not utility. Some projects do that. Token drops are not utility. Those are all just more fundraising. And at some point, a project has to actually build something of value with all this. If all they can do is airdrops and get royalties and all that kind of stuff, they're not actually doing anything of value with it. And some people might disagree with me on this, but I don't buy the whole we're building the culture type thing, which is where this blurry line with, oh, we're art, so like it's not quite clear what we are. Yeah, you can be a very successful and compelling and recognized Ponzi, but that's still Ponzinomics that's fueling you if you're not building something of value. So if we take, I'll go right there, if we take Bored Apes as the kind of flagship of the space, up until now, I mean, they were delivering value as a club. I'm not sure that's really there anymore now, probably partly through the mechanic of it being diluted as people bought in, rotated out of the club. Then it moved to selling a flex that is actually value, but it's not very sustainable. I think I wrote a thread about this back in January when they were riding high at 110 ETH, and I queried whether they were actually a sustainable store of value. And my conclusion was that no, they're not, because like celebrities eventually get bored and need to spend more stuff on the latest things, and then it's not sustainable to just have celebrities buying your stuff. So the flex style of the side of things is not really sustainable. And now they're doing the other side. And if they manage to build like the next World of Warcraft with the other side, and they distribute the benefits of this huge commercial success to their holders, then they'll have revealed themselves not to be a Ponzi. But if all there is a future of airdrops and like more coin drops and more serums and whatnot, that's just Ponzinomics. And that will take you, as Basie is showing, that can take you quite a long way, but it's ultimately not sustainable.
Yeah, that's a good point. And do you have any examples of projects that do a good job in spending their funds and building?
I have examples of projects that I believe are doing a good job in doing this. All of them have issues and are still figuring out, because it's a very new space and people don't really know how to do this properly. I would say that, and disclaimer, I'm going to mention projects that I'm a part of, because those are the ones that I own, that I know most. I'm not selling any of these projects. I don't believe I'm pumping and dumping on anyone, but I am holding some of those. You know that I'm talking about projects that I hold. But if we take, for example, one of the ones I usually mention is Llamaverse. They built a club for NFT traders, and it provides utility in the form of tools, of whitelist access, which is something that new traders usually want, community that can help you get better information and help each other to find information that's useful for NFT traders. Yeah, those are the ones that come to my mind that are the key benefits there. Now, is that worth exactly the price that they're at now? Well, in a sense, it is, because that's what the price that people are willing to pay. But what it's worth is for the market to decide. But I can see that's worth something. If you're a trader and if you want to do NFT trading, it is helpful to have an NFT community. It's helpful to have access to whitelist. It's helpful to have access to tools. So therefore, it's worth something, be it 1 cent or 10 ETH. Like, that's for the market to decide what exactly it's worth. But that's worth something, because it is like there is a product there. There is a service being provided that's valuable. And it's not in the form of more Ponzi. It's not in the form of reselling your NFT to somebody else for more, or of airdrops, or that kind of stuff. Meta Angels, to me, is another one that I think is on the way to building some kind of really hard value. And I think a lot of people here probably are Meta Angels holders, so I'm probably not going to get a lot of pushback on this. But there, the reason why I was drawn to the project and why I invested was because, they're building a way to encourage people to help each other, to bring them together in this kind of project, and to enable connections to be made that would otherwise be more difficult to make. And as a business founder, as an entrepreneur, somebody who's been in the business world for a while, I know the value of connection. There was a point recently where I received a nasty legal letter from somebody, and I could have stressed out. In fact, I was stressed out, because usually are when you receive a nasty legal letter. at that point, I talked to my wife. She's one of those super networking people. Like, she just knows people. And I said, oh, do you know a lawyer who could help me with this? She introduced me to a lawyer. The next morning, I was talking to that lawyer. He reassured me, just send this. Don't worry about it. They probably just want you to do this thing. Do it if you want, and then just ignore them. And I followed the advice, and then I didn't need to worry about this. They sent a couple more letters, and then they stopped bothering. And that advice, that connection, was really valuable for me. And I've got that for free to an extent, although I'm not sure if marriage is free. Like, that's another conversation. I got that for free because I'm married to a super networker, but not everybody has that access. And I see that as extremely valuable if it's implemented. And I don't know if Ali and Alex are going to do it right, but I believe they can. And I'm backing them with my money by holding a bunch of Meta Angels. I've lost count of how many. I think it's getting towards 50 probably by now. And I'm curious to see where they're going to take this. And I think if they deliver, that is really valuable. And people might buy it because they get access to this network. So those are a couple of examples. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. That's great. And yeah, 50 Meta Angels. That's a lot. That's impressive.
Yeah, occasionally I see the price and I'm like, oh, like, they're really cheap. I'm going to buy some more.
Yeah, I know.
It's a bad habit. Maybe a good habit if it turns out to be a good call, which I'm certainly hoping it will be.
It's the Seneca way, right? Buy 50 and sell, maybe.
Yeah, like, basically what happened, like, it's like I made this mistake with Llamaverse because I was in the project since its inception, and I talked to the founder and I was coaching him, and I was like, okay, this guy has this kind of fire. I know that he's going to build something with this. And at one point I realized I just had one gold pass and no other exposure to the project, and I had no intention of selling that gold pass. I was like, okay, so I'm basically completely not exposed to the project. So then I went and I bought three, which were at 0.09 ETH at the time. And I thought that was a good way to get exposure. And then later on, like, at one point they reached 8 ETH, I think. And like, I didn't sell any at 8 ETH. I'm not very good at timing tops and bottoms, but I did sell around 5, 6, something like that. And at that point, I was like, why didn't I buy more? I see this project. I believe in the founder. I think they can do this stuff. Like, I think they're going to build something of value. If they do, I don't want to be sitting there with just 3. I want to invest more than $300 in their project. And yeah, like, Meta Angels is the kind of project that I want to be more invested in than a few hundred bucks.
Nice. Yeah, so thank you. And we will be rounding off the spaces here at this point. And we had one more topic, NFT lending and the leverage that brings with it. So would you be up for joining at a later date to discuss more about that, Daniel?
Sure. Yeah. This time worked quite well for me, so it's quite good.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, so thank you so much for joining. Really good.
Thanks for having me.
This was good.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Really appreciate your time.
It was a great discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your depth insights. It was really interesting.
You're welcome.
Yes, I agree. Okay, that's it for this time. Have a good evening or day, wherever you are. Anyone? Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
See you next time. Bye. Oh.